Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. Now, one question I always get asked is related to bunions. And I get sent, you know, some crazy ads to pull the big toe out or these crazy big shoes that you need to wear to help protect your foot. And I'm here to tell you it's all wrong. It's not true. The big toe moving in is actually a symptom and a result of the lack of stability that we have in the middle of the foot. So when we reduce our strength, when we have increased laxity of our tendons and ligaments, the bone that attaches into our big toe actually moves out. And when that moves out, our body lacks homeostasis, so the big toe moves in. And we get what we see on the edge of our toe, which is a bunion formation. And that can cause a lot of joint discomfort, inflammation, arthritis. And what we actually need to help address the root cause of this is increasing the strength at the bottom of the foot. And we do this by wearing more barefoot shoes. We've seen studies that actually show when you wear barefoot shoes, you increase your strength at the bottom of your feet within 6 months, up to 60% an increased strength in the feet just from wearing the shoes. That's pretty dang incredible without doing any additional exercise. And I also know from my mom, she told me that now she can only wear Vivo barefoot shoes. She has a bunion because it helps to create the space needed so there's not as much pressure on her foot and her bunion. That is why we love Vivo barefoot shoes. We've been talking about them for so long. And if you have not tried it yet, I highly recommend grabbing a pair and using code OPTIMAL20. This gets you 20% off of any shoes that are not already discounted. So if you have not yet, go to the link in our show notes, check out Vivo Barefoot, and use code OPTIMAL20 at checkout. So today we wanted to talk about the straightening or losing the curve in your neck and, you know, what can you do about it? Should you be worried about it? Is this a cause of neck pain? And we want to touch in on it. This was a question I got asked from the community. So please continue to give me your feedback and let me know what you want to hear about. Especially answering in those little question boxes that I throw up on Instagram. That's where I got this one from. Because there is mixed research that we're going to go yes. over. But looking at like, what does the evidence actually say? What is good evidence? Because a lot of people can cite things, but it could have really high bias and not be very strong in the evidence category. So we want to help you to understand that a little bit more and empower you with tools that can ultimately help you reduce neck pain.
And this is a really tricky topic to approach because when we looked into the research, it is so mixed and there is prevailing voices on either side. Essentially, what we're trying to look at is, does having a straight cervical spine or kyphotic or slightly rounded forward cervical spine correlate to or cause pain? Because that's what a lot of people have been told.
Yes.
And that's what we hear from people, or people have told us, oh, well, I have a straight cervical spine. Mm-hmm. And they just say that like, oh, I have a straight cervical spine. Like that is, I have a straight cervical spine. That's why I have pain. And that's what they're equating in their mind, which tells us that's what they've been told by somebody. Mm-hmm. That's what they've been told in some sort of office. And I want to preface this episode that we're not trying to use this topic to crap on any sort of specific provider.
No.
There are providers in all professions mm-hmm. that use images and radiographs. Physical therapists are probably one of the worst offenders of this, using an image or a radiograph or something that they were sent yeah. that has MRI results on it saying, oh, look at this. That's why you have your mm-hmm. knee pain. And there's just so much research that is saying that we cannot say that. We cannot say that something that we're seeing on an image is directly causal to why someone has pain. There are certain instances where we can say like, hey, maybe looking at that, maybe taking that bit of information and just like keeping it in mind during our treatment plan could be beneficial. But we need to start separating from this. I have a straight cervical spine. That's why I have neck pain.
Because we also have studies that show if you get an MRI or if you get an X-ray, it can lead to fear and overall worse pain outcomes because you saw that image.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happens a lot when people get this and they're told, oh, see, your neck is straight. Oh, you're lacking that curve. This is what's happening.
Yeah.
And it automatically plays in our mind of like, oh, that's bad. Oh, that's wrong. And like, again, our brain is the thing that's detecting pain and sensing those pain signals, sending out pain signals. So if we're heightening those signals just based on what we're telling the brain, we're going to feel more pain. We're going to be afraid of more movement. And we want to get you moving more and less afraid of the image.
Taking a quick pause from the interview to talk about hydration. And now I'm not just talking about drinking enough water, which yes, is absolutely important. I'm talking about getting in the electrolytes that we are losing throughout the day without even knowing it. Sodium, potassium, and magnesium are critical to so many of our body's functions. And that's why Jen and I use Element electrolyte drink mixes every single day. It makes sure that we keep our electrolytes at the optimal level so we don't experience things like brain fog, fatigue, muscle cramps. It can even help with things like sleep and your bowel movements and so much more. So if you want to try out Element, head down to the link in the show notes. My favorite flavor is their citrus. Jen loves their raspberry, and we both absolutely love their lemonade salt, which, good news, is actually going to be an indefinite flavor for them now. So head down to the link in the show notes. It's just drinkelement.com/optimal. That's drinkelement, spelled out LMNT.com/optimal. You also get a free gift with every order, so you can try out all of their flavors and know which one you want when you come back to inevitably get more. Regardless of what the image says, regardless of what the body or whatever looks like, getting strong, getting confidence, and moving better with less pain should really be the focus of most clinicians or practitioners. It's just unfortunate that many people find that that's a great way to sell their services, whether they're doing that intentionally or not, you know, is a different story. But all right, let's just get into it. We want to talk about this because neck pain is super prevalent amongst the entire population. Mm-hmm. Nearly 2/3, that's like 66 people out of 100, 67 people out of 100 experience neck pain in their lifetime, with 37% of people saying that they experience neck pain annually.
And, you know, understanding, like, let's talk about the cervical spine. What is, we keep saying this, right?
Cervical spine is our neck. There are seven cervical vertebrae. So we have C1 through C7. And when we talk about the normal, quote unquote, normal curvature of the spine, is we want to see between 20 and 40 degrees of what we call cervical lordosis. So that's like a backward curvature of the spine. And when we talk about straightening of the spine, that's where that, quote, cervical lordosis has less and less of an angle. So all the way to straight, which would be zero, and then kyphosis is when we start seeing an actual forward curvature in that cervical spine, or cervical kyphosis. Often when people think of kyphosis, they think of the upper back rounding forward. We're going to be talking specifically about the neck in this episode.
And the idea behind this is that, you know, straightening of the spine is going to increase the stress, muscle strain, making other muscles start to work harder and potentially lead to increased disc wear. So
disc wear or disc herniations.
But also that can happen without seeing that straightening. So again, there's lots of caveats to this, right? What we're seeing in general is that an asymptomatic adult, so this is people who have no neck pain, we see that 32% still show a slight reversal or straightening of their cervical spine. So they're falling out of that curve, or they're either straight in that cervical spine, and 32% are showing that they do not have pain.
So about 1/3 of people, no pain, have changes on their images. Why are they not freaking out? You know,
right? Why?
Because they don't have the pain.
Right? Why do they not have pain? But you're told this is why you have pain.
Yeah, and then we look at degenerative disc disease. So among people who have degenerative disc disease, it's shown that 60% of those people have this cervical spine straightening or forward rounding. Bending of the, or rounding forward, or the kyphosis. And kind of like Jen said, okay, even if we are noticing that there's a correlation, people who have a straight spine are more forward rounded spine have degenerative disc disease. We have studies, again, in asymptomatic individuals that mm-hmm. show we have degenerative disc disease showing up across the lifespan, across
from like 20s to 80s, no matter who you...
20-year-old individuals, 70% of men and 12% of women had degenerative disc disease. And that went all the way up to 86% of men and 89% of women who were 60 years or older.
Exactly. So, because we've already discussed this on a previous podcast, DDD, degenerative disc disease, is changes internally that happen as we age.
Yep.
And based on what we're doing with our body, just like we get wrinkles on the outside, we're going to have changes happen structurally on the inside, and it doesn't necessarily have to be scary.
So depending on what age population that study was done on that said 60% of people who had degenerative disc disease had cervical kyphosis, like, you know, that could have been just fairly normal.
Well, and of that, who was in actual pain?
Yeah.
You know, and so that's again where it's like, just because you're seeing this on an image doesn't mean that it's correlated to pain. And so again, if you're in pain and you see that on an image, can you necessarily say that's the reason for pain?
So going into studies to just that specifically looked at, does the straightening or curvature of my spine have any correlation to my pain levels? Mm-hmm. Maybe. Again, when we looked, there were meta-analyses, which we look at meta-analyses as like the gold standard of research, because they group all sorts of similar studies together and look at their findings and then take findings out of that. So there was a large meta-analysis on 700 subjects from all these grouped studies that found no significant link between cervical curvature and pain. There were multiple other studies, not meta-analyses, that's also found no significant difference in pain and non-pain groups when looking at the curvature of the spine. And then we look at the next point. There was a meta-analysis done that did find significantly smaller curvature in neck pain patients versus people who had the ideal 20 degree or more of cervical lordosis. So again, we're at kind of a bypass here of like, okay, I'm having a meta-analysis that says, no, it doesn't matter. And I'm having a meta-analysis that says, yes, it does potentially matter. Where does that leave us?
Well, but then you look deeper into that meta-analysis, right? And that's where yes. We're seeing some misrepresentation of what the studies are actually finding.
Yeah. So I did look deeper into the meta-analysis that said, yes, there is a difference. And it was just interesting because I was reading this on a blog that clearly looked like they were trying to sell at the end of the blog their services as to how to get you out of neck pain and how to fix your cervical spine curve. And so then I look into the meta-analysis, and although it did say they looked at 6 studies overall, and it said 4 of them found that there was a correlation between people who had straighter or kyphotic cervical spines did have a higher degree of pain. 2 of them said, nope, no difference. So again, 4 versus 2. Great. You know, slightly more evidence showing that it might matter. But then you look deeper at risk of bias. Mm-hmm. And I did pull this study up, and the risk of bias of the 6 studies, none of them were lower than 5 out of 9 risk of bias. 5 out of 9, 7 out of 9, 5 out of 9, 8 out of 9, 7 out of 9, 8 out of 9.
And meaning, what does that mean? When
risk
you're
of
saying-
bias means that there's might be some evidence or some features of the study that are biasing the opinions of the researchers, mm-hmm. whether they're not blinded to certain components. Like normally in gold standard research, you're supposed to not know which person has pain and which person doesn't have pain when you're taking these measurements, or they're taking a convenience sample. Say they're just working out of a clinic or a hospital and they're taking a sample of these specific patients that they know all have neck pain, or they're a clinic that sells a solution to neck pain, like that could contribute to their risk of bias. So clearly, of all 6 of these studies, the ones that found a difference and didn't find a difference all had a fairly high risk of bias. And in the conclusions, the people even say, like, yeah, our overall data leans towards maybe there's a correlation to straightening or curvature of the spine that that could be something you look at when you're treating these patients. But the studies all had different methods. The patient populations they were studying were all different. There was a high risk of bias. So there's a lot of things that lowered their confidence interval. And these are all statistics terms, their confidence interval and being able to just say, yes, there's a correlation. This is something we should pay attention to.
But this is what's important to understand, because you can read a blog or you can go to a clinic and look at their blogs and see what they're saying. And they're citing research.
Or that's, their pamphlet or whatever.
Yeah, that's saying, oh, this is so important. This is statistically, like, this has been researched. This is why I need to work on this, right?
Yeah.
But this is why we don't know what to believe, because then you look deeper into it and you have to understand the statistical differences in things. You have to understand how to read research a little bit deeper to understand that that's actually not strong evidence to say that this makes a difference and this really matters in your pain journey, because we know that pain is super complex. And we talk about this in every episode. And even though we give you exercises, we alone say exercises can't help. Maybe it was your improved sleep. Maybe it was your reduced stress. Maybe it was the fact that you changed a job, whatever it may be. Like, there are so many more reasons to why you can have pain beyond just looking at a straight spine. And we have a better meta-analysis, I would say, that proves that there's no
yeah.
reason to compare these two. Like, that straightening of your spine isn't going to be indicative of why you have neck pain.
And I like this line from the other meta-analysis that said there was no like statistically significant difference, that says, it is surely difficult to find definite answers considering that pain as a biopsychosocial phenomenon is probably too vast a problem
yes.
to be simply reduced to any kind of measures, no matter how sophisticated and appealing such a computation may be. And this is what we are finding in the research more and more when talking about pain. You cannot take and say your cervical spine has only 8 degrees lordosis. That's why you have pain. No. Is it something that you can look at and something that you can try and find along the body why they may be positioning themselves a certain way, why they might hold their head a certain way? Does it have to do with their breathing? Does it have to do with this? Not to mention everything Jen just brought up that adds stress into our life, which does impact our pain. So I think when we're trying to focus on points like this that are so minute mm-hmm. when it comes to the overall pain picture, we're looking at the wrong thing.
Now, if you're like, okay, but I am a person who has been told that I need to reverse this straightening of my spine or this kyphotic curve that is necessary to get me back into my pain point. Let's look at the evidence that says, can we change the structure of our spine and what evidence in terms of treatments are really doing? And again, they were looking at evidence here, right? What's strong? What's not?
Are there actual evidence that someone did this treatment to a lot of people and significantly changed the curvature of their spine?
Right. So one of, I would say, the strongest types of evidence, which is also not very strong when we look at it, it's kind of what we classify as moderate evidence. So if we're looking at strong versus moderate versus weak, this is going to kind of fall in the middle. So it may or may not kind of help here. Is we're looking at cervical traction. So think of any kind of device that helps to provide some traction on the cervical spine.
And this
spine.
Was specifically cervical extension traction.
Yes.
So traction with an extension bias, which is
putting your chin
bringing
up.
Us back into that lordosis.
Exactly. And so sometimes a clinician can do that with holding onto like a strap or a cloth type of material.
Or just with their hands.
Or
even.
Just with their hands. Or maybe you're going into a device that's kind of creating that that traction. So traction is kind of like creating, we're trying to create space along that neck, right? And we're kind of tilting it back into that extension place. Now, obviously, there's going to be different methods depending on who you go to and the type of clinician that you see, the type of device that they're going to use. But there is some evidence showing that it can correlate to reduce neck pain. Now, correlation doesn't always mean causation, and that's what we have to look at as well. So were they doing cervical neck traction as well as reducing their stress, as well as doing some exercise, as well as
patient education? Doing patient education during these sessions can have a significant impact on somebody's pain levels. And this was the one that said it had the best evidence for actually changing the curve as well. I would really want to dig down into those studies yeah. and see what they did, because it's Jen and my belief that it's hard using solely a passive treatment,
yes.
which cervical traction is solely a passive treatment, to have that significant of a change and lasting of a change. So I would want to see, did they have significant follow-up? Was it like...
Well, they didn't. And that's why it's not as quality yeah, like, of evidence.
Did we just do the traction and then take the measurement, or do a certain amount of sessions of traction and then take the measurement right after one of the sessions?
Right.
Like that could really skew the results versus waiting a few days and then taking a measurement. The next one was exercise plus manual therapy. Again, manual therapy is such a broad category that looking into the methods on what they actually did for manual therapy would be important, but it said there was moderate evidence for change of the curve, moderate evidence for symptom relief, and the quality of the evidence, weak to moderate evidence for change of the curve, strong evidence for symptom relief, and strong evidence as far as the quality of the evidence.
Which makes sense, right? Because if we're doing manual treatment, no matter what it is, we're getting some symptom reduction, we're getting some relaxation around the neck area, whether you're using hands-on treatment, traction, whatever it may be, right? We're getting some relaxation to the area, then we're adding in some exercises like some deep neck flexors, some postural control. So even if we're not loading a ton on the system, we're at least getting some feedback to help reduce symptoms, which we know movement and manual techniques, some touch, that can all be so beneficial. So I'm not surprised that it helps to reduce some pain symptoms.
So then there's a group of different techniques that would have weak evidence for actually changing the curve here. All right. So this is changing the curve for deep neck flexor exercises, weak evidence that it's actually going to change the curve of your spine, which makes sense to me. Chiropractic adjustments alone, and just so we're not only throwing chiropractors under the bus, manipulations in a physical therapy clinic or any other type of provider.
Osteopathic clinic.
Those manipulations or adjustments alone are not, there's no evidence that it changes the curve of your spine, or orthotic and postural devices.
Laying on like one of those curved pillows.
Curved neck pillows.
Yeah.
Doing those things alone are not going to change the curve of the spine. However, with deep neck flexor training, there's strong evidence that that can reduce pain symptoms.
Movement.
And the overall quality of the evidence is strong. Chiropractic adjustments alone, weak to moderate evidence that that's going to reduce your pain symptoms, low quality of evidence. And the orthotic and postural devices is just weak, weak, low across the board. So again, what this is telling me, the two things that have the strongest evidence for reducing pain include movement, mm-hmm. include exercise, doing things to activate muscles around the neck, make our neck feel more safe and supported. Mm-hmm. That makes complete sense to me. And the one that included manual therapy and exercise, as we find in so many different things, has the best evidence for changing the curve and reducing pain.
And all of this to say, now, okay, we want to talk about some specific exercises that we really like.
Waited this whole time.
Yes. Let's get into some exercises. Now, we do have a neck and upper back plan on Gen Health that takes you through a lot of different types of exercises, including mobility from the thoracic spine up, because we know that that's going to help some core awareness, all the things. So if you want something that's 5 to 15 minutes, it's a 2-week plan and there's 3 different phases to continue to progress. There's mindset shifts because like we said...
That's big, especially when it comes to neck pain.
Yes, pain is not just movement related. So please don't skip on those videos if you're going to watch it. But let's give you some like key ones that we like to go to, which again, we're not saying it's going to change the curve of your spine, but it could help reduce some of the pain symptoms that you're experiencing.
First one I would touch on is the deep neck flexor training.
1000%.
It's on the list. It's got strong evidence that it can reduce pain. And what that is, it's essentially doing the chin tuck. So if you're laying on your back on the ground, kind of creating a chin tuck so that you're feeling like you're making a double chin. And it's like down and back with the chin as you're feeling like you're pulling tall. A string is pulling tall straight from the top of your head.
Just do that like sitting. If you're driving, if you're listening, like you can do that anywhere.
If you kind of press your head back into the headrest, I like to do that when I'm driving because it really is going to activate these deep muscles in the front part of our neck. That especially if we have a forward head posture, we're not using as often. And that's going to make our neck feel more supported, more balanced. If you're laying on the ground doing it, you can even then try barely lifting the head, looking your eyes towards your knees, and lifting the head just like barely. So you could slide a sheet of paper under your head off the ground and holding for 10 seconds. And if you're doing it right, you should be shaking. You should really feel this deep burning, not burning, but like muscle fatigue in the front of your neck that you haven't felt before, because not a lot of people are actively consciously using those muscles.
Unless you're going and getting specific exercises from a therapist to tell you to do it. I mean, and this could be done across all planes. So not only laying on your back, but laying on your side, being in a quadruped or all fours position and doing it. You could use it with rotation. One of my favorites is laying on the ground, propped onto your elbows. So we're already going to get a little bit more extension from our back, something that we don't do a lot if we're sitting throughout the day, right? So just propping onto your elbows and then doing that chin tuck and trying to hold it as long as you can as you come and you extend the neck. So kind of looking up toward the ceiling until you can't hold chin tuck anymore, and then chin tucking to come back down. And just like 5 to 10 of those every single day can start to feel like you're reversing that that cervical spine. Even though, again, we're not saying that that's the goal here. We're just trying to get you to increase your range of motion with less symptoms and improve your overall control of your neck, right? And what we like to do as well, when we're talking about neck, you know, reducing neck tension, we have to look at what's happening underneath. And so getting you to learn how to use that serratus anterior, the shoulder blade muscle, because if you just are kind of wherever you are sitting or standing, and you think of drawing your elbows like in toward each other and forward, and see what happens to your neck when you do that. Like traditionally, your neck kind of goes into that like chin tuck position. We kind of come into that straighter spine just by starting to activate and turn on those muscles. So if we start to use some of that postural feedback, relearn how to use some of these muscles around the shoulder blades, open up the chest, so incredibly important. And then the last thing we want to touch on is getting strong overall. Yeah. Strength overall is so, so, so important to resilience and reducing pain symptoms and ultimately reducing the signaling to those pain symptoms and making us less sensitive to experiencing it long-term or chronic. So the stronger that you are long-term, the better that you're going to be.
Yeah. I mean, there's oodles of research in the area of how beneficial exercise is to most pain patterns, especially chronic and persistent pain patterns. There's like a whole section of physical therapists and movement professionals who are like, oh, you've got neck pain, strength train. Oh, you've got back pain, strength train. You got hip pain, strength train. Like getting someone moving, getting their heart rate up. There are so many cascades in the body, from hormonal shifts to, you know, strength gains, everything across the board, lymphatic return, that you're going to benefit from and can help your pain. So adding that in on top of any specific neck exercises that you do can be just as valuable. Thanks so much for sticking around for another episode. Hopefully we changed your mind. Hopefully we gave you some things to think about. And if you know somebody who's been told this, that their straight spine is the reason that they have neck pain, pass it along. Pass it along to another practitioner who might have varying opinions on things. We're always open to the conversation and the discussion. If you're interested in getting into that neck and upper back plan, go to jen.health/free trial. As our podcast listener, use code OPTIMAL and you'll get your first whole month for just $20. That's the first two phases of the neck and upper back plan that you can do for just $20. And of course, we'll see you next time on the Optimal Body Podcast.